The NFL offseason is in full swing. Jimmy Garoppolo is off to the Raiders. We think Aaron Rodgers is going to the Jets. Zeke Elliott's been cut from the Cowboys, but I won't tell you all the moves now because we're about to talk about them for the next hour on 3rd and 5. Welcome in to another episode of 3rd and 5. Three Kiwis sitting here in Brooklyn talking all things American sport. Today, all things NFL, just about myself, Simon Hampton, with James Thwaites and Dave Rice, two fellow Kiwis. Gents, welcome in. It's been a busy day, a busy couple of days in the NFL. How you guys doing?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? Like, the Super Bowl happens, then there's this lull, then, like, some contracts get signed and the franchise tagging, and then all hell breaks loose. And this is the first kind of time, like, and I don't know if you guys feel the same, but, like, I feel like there is so much action. And I think it's because, like, all the NFL reporters are finally, like, look, it's one thing the NBA does really well with Woj and Shams, like, where it's, like, constantly talking about transactions that, I mean, they're talking about, like, these 32-year-old, like, centers being signed to, like, a one-year deal, $4.5 million, but everyone's going at it, so it feels so chaotic. But apart from that, which I've absolutely loved, it snowed yesterday, so that was great. It was nice and cold for a bit. It's our third time snowing this winter, which is kind of odd. But what about you, Dave? I see you kind of brooding there in the corner. Obviously, the people listening to the pod can't see that you're wearing a Nets top, but I got to assume that that's probably adding to your overall look today.
Well, I love this, the new look Nets team. Like, it's, they obviously didn't have a great result last night, but you know, they've been, they're a team to get behind, and Mikal Bridges, they've got a guy that's probably a future all-star.
Hey, that new look Nets team that can beat the Celtics, that can beat the Nuggets, but can't beat the Thunder.
But that was on the end of a long 5 or 6 game road trip, so you sort of get those sort of unlucky losses there. No, I think as you're saying with the, I feel like the NFL, yeah, they've done real well. Like, just, and I think it helps with social media. Like, even just when guys get re-signed or franchise tag, like, everything's kind of newsworthy, and you are just getting these updates through the days and past few weeks, and it's, you know, it's interesting to see. And then you kind of, you know, they've done really well to kind of, I guess, captivate as an audience or as fans while it's well after the season's finished and well before the season begins. So yeah, I think, and you sort of touched on it, I think the NBA has had some really good off-season activity of late in the last few seasons, and NFL maybe not, wasn't so good or as exciting in the prior year, but it's certainly ramped up its game this year.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, I think, and like, if you circle back to New Zealand, you're like, we could learn a thing or two about this sort of stuff. And you know, the Americans do such a great job with their sports of marketing it as like a, as more than just the sport, and being a whole package off the court, off the grass, and I prefer the season, don't get me wrong, but my goodness, when you have, like, you know, a week like this week in the NFL, it is as good as the season for me. Like, there's so much stuff going on, it's so chaotic. The players kind of buy into it as well. We see Aaron Rodgers doing his thing on the Pat McAfee show and playing games and stuff, so it is really an entertainment thing, which I you know, sometimes I guess you want it to just stick to the sport, but for me, I think it's fantastic.
What do you think would have happened back in the day? So, like, Dan Carter, peak Dan Carter, it's obviously at the Crusaders. What do you reckon he gets traded for? Like, if, like, the Hurricanes wanted to make a move for him, you know, like, how much would a team? This is why they need that kind of stuff in Super Rugby. Like, it just makes it so much better. Like, they just need better trading. Trading to that level.
Maybe they had to, like, the Hurricanes would have to have given up a 19-year-old Artie Severe. And if there was obviously draft picks, maybe a first rounder in the next season. But, yeah, it's definitely, again, as you said, Simon, it's something we've kind of contemplated on this. And I would love to see it brought into the rugby landscape, along with the combine and things like that we've spoken.
traded in Artie Surveyor, 19-year-old Artie Surveyor, first-round pick, and then Ma Nonu just running straight at the Hurricanes coach full blast, and that's
I would have traded 19-year-old Artie Surveyor for peak Dan Carter. That's a move you make. That's a win now.
There'd be more. Yeah.
That Hurricanes team as well. If you, they're back in like what are we talking here? 2005, 2006. If they had peak Dan Carter running the cutter instead of Jimmy Goffith, they would have been champions.
The Hurricanes are always a fly half. They're always a first five kind of away from. Yeah.
Anyway.
Actually, before we pivot to Aaron Rodgers. If there's any New Zealand rugby player that would go and do a darkness retreat, who would it be?
Anton Oliver.
I was going to say Anton Oliver. There it is.
I think he would do it. He would do it in the deep south, where it's probably got the in the peak of winter, when it's got the least amount of sunshine. You know, probably have like 6 hours window of daylight.
Yeah, that's right. Most of the players that play for Southland do a darkness retreat every season. they don't have a choice. Let's use that to pivot into the first topic of the day. Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets, or he says he wants to go to the Jets, right? A deal kind of has to happen now. It's kind of puts the Jets, I think. I mean, I don't know how far a deal is along, but it kind of puts the Jets in a tricky situation and kind of helps the Packers a little bit, because now the Jets kind of have to get a deal done, and maybe the Packers can just be like, okay, what about another second round pick or something just to finish it off. So I'm interested to see what happens next. What's your read on the situation?
It's kind of an interesting one. Like, I know you kind of mentioned that there is, you know, so like up until this point, right, like Aaron Rodgers, we had the same conversation on the pod last year, you know, whether Aaron Rodgers would be back for last season. He came back for the Packers. Packers still didn't give him enough weapons. Like, Jordan Love was still there. It was kind of this weird, awkward year for the Packers and Aaron Rodgers overall. They missed out on the playoffs. You know, at this point, he's got like $59 million or $49 million, some horrific figure to come back for this coming season. He could retire and just walk away, though. So while he was in his darkness retreat, and everyone's referred to it as him emerging from the darkness, like he's like Bane in like The Dark Knight Rises or something. But he's come out of this, his phone's been blowing up, and basically like the Packers kind of indicated while he was in that darkness retreat that they're ready to move on from him. So they've publicly come out and said that. The Jets were given permission to talk to Aaron Rodgers, and he's talked to them. Apparently, prior to going into the darkness retreat, there was about 90% chance that he was going to retire. That's obviously changed a lot now.
No, I don't know.
Those are his words. He said 90%. It was a 90-10 split. Again, you never really know with Aaron Rodgers. He might have been having some ayahuasca or something before saying it, but so now we're here. I don't know who's in a better or worse position, though, because you're looking at Aaron Rodgers now saying if he comes back, like, he wants to be a Jet. He just wants the deal done. He wants to be there. The Packers have said, their general manager, have basically said, like, we don't want Aaron Rodgers on the team this year, this coming season. They said that, you know, a week or so ago. They're ready to just kind of cut and run. I don't know whether there's more pressure on the Packers or the Jets at the moment, because I get the whole Jets, like, hey, Aaron Rodgers wants to be here, get a deal done. But also, if you're the Packers, Aaron Rodgers is not going to come back and play for the Green Bay Packers. So it's kind of like, you got to get what you can get for the guy that, you know, clearly, like, it's a divorce at the moment. So, you know, I don't know what they get, though. Like, the Jets are signing all these ex-Packer receivers and things like that. So all these receivers that, you know, are currently at the Jets that were happy about all these rumors, I don't know if they should be so happy, because they're probably going to be involved in a trade package for Rodgers in the long run.
Yeah, my take on who may get traded, I think you can take no chance that Garrett Wilson or Sauce Gardner are involved in the trade. Like, the Jets would just not do that. Those two all-star rookie offensive and defensive players of the year. I can't see any world where the Jets allow that. There is a
even for Aaron Rodgers. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers. Like,
I know. I think they'll be off the. Or if I was a Jets fan, or if I was the Jets front office, I understand obviously with getting Rodgers in, it is all about a going all in to try and win. Probably in Rodgers, what has he got? Probably 2 years. Whether he signs for more, like realistically, I don't think he's playing more than that. You don't want to be setting your franchise back even further. I think they've got this unique situation that was spoken about where they've got a good young, which young means all rookie contracts are cheap core, and they need to try and capitalize on that. And you don't want to be trading the best parts of that. So someone like an Elijah Moore, who's a very good player, very good wide receiver too, I think he could be on the chopping block because I think that's a player that the Packers would be pretty happy to sort of get in return. So I feel like he's more likely than Garrett Wilson. I think it's going to happen. I think it's pretty exciting because, as I just sort of mentioned, I think what I've sort of come to realize in the recent times with the success of the Eagles last season, even with the 49ers going deep, is you have this like the rookie contract quarterbacks or rookie contract teams or teams that have certainly a rookie contract quarterback do quite well because they can kind of fill the pieces, you know, use the salary cap to build out the squad. And with the Jets, it'll be kind of opposite where there'll be so much taken by the Rodgers, but they've got such good young players across the board around that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in what they do at wide receiver because if these reports are true and Alan Lazard is going, Randall Cobb, I mean, he's not quite so significant. Odell Beckham, like if you're getting all those guys, a couple of points to make. Does then that make it a bit easier to say, oh, let's throw Garrett Wilson into the mix and then we can maybe lower the draft pick compensation we have to send out because we've got some good wide receivers coming in? And secondly, is there a risk here that you bring over these Packers guys and you just, like, you turn into the Packers offense from last season, which was not fantastic? What do you reckon?
It's kind of like one of those things. Like, I think the fact that they're bolstering up their wide receiver squad with ex-Packers, I mean, the depth chart's only so deep, you know what I mean? Like, you only have so many people on rosters. The fact that they're doing that, like, Garrett Wilson, you know, is potentially part of this deal. You know, like, Elijah Moore is the easy one to pick out. He obviously had problems last year. He wanted to trade and stuff like that. But again, like, the Packers are not going to, like, let Aaron Rodgers go to an opposing team for a first-round pick and an Elijah Moore. Like, it's going to take a lot. Like, and it would obviously suck for, as a Jets fan, to see Sauce Gardner or Garrett Wilson go, or even Williams. You know, like some of this good young core that they've built. But at the end of the day, their problems, as it always seems to be with the Jets, is at quarterback, and this is a way to solve it. One person that they won't be able to pick up is Juju Smith-Schuster, who's obviously kind of breaking news today. He's signed a 3-year deal with the Patriots. So,
Juju off to New England. Sounds like the Chiefs tried to keep him, but it wasn't to be. I saw a good tweet from Andrew Brandt from Sports Illustrated. He said, "Aaron Rodgers on his way out of Green Bay just helped out the Packers franchise immensely. The Jets fan base is now at a fever pitch, just waiting for management to do this deal. The Packers have no timetable, no need to hurry. They can just wait for the Jets to cave to their price." And I think there's a lot of truth in that because I think, but yeah, I mean they can just, you know, the pressure's gonna mount on the Jets to get this deal done now. And if it's, you know, we want Garrett Wilson and the Jets are only willing to give up Elijah Moore, then yeah, I wonder if the Jets at some point do just cave and throw Garrett Wilson in if that was the deal breaker.
Probably. You know, we just saw this happen with the Panthers trading up to the first round pick. The deal was there, and Chicago wanted DJ Moore. Panthers said no. Then DJ Moore ends up in the deal.
and you wonder if, you know, they've given a hardline stance to say no for now, but when push comes to shove, they might just throw him in. But either way, it's going to be interesting to see you know, Aaron Rodgers in New York and how that's going to go. And we talked about this over the course of the last season, that this Jets team had a lot of potential, but just needed at quarterback, and now they're going to get that, and so we're going to go into the new season with plenty of expectation on this Jets side, which we haven't seen for a long time. So excited about that. But it's
Look at the AFC East as a result of this. Like we've talked about some of the other divisions, which are just loaded. AFC West being, you know, the one that gets a lot of attention, but a Jets team with Rodgers, the Dolphins, who I think we're going to talk about, you know, a little bit for who's done quite well in the off season, are starting to look pretty bloody good. And obviously the Bills have been there or thereabouts for the last few seasons. Josh Allen there. It's the Patriots, who are not a bad side, who are probably the weak link of that four now. Bill Belichick, he's always going to get the best out of them, and they're going to be a plucky side. So that AFC East, there is not an easy game at all.
Yeah, I love that. Cool. I think you're spot on. I mean, yeah, the Patriots are always, you know, particularly up there at Gillette Stadium, they're never going to be easy beats. But let's look around the league now. Just mentioned Juju Smith off to the Patriots. There's been a bunch of moves made on both sides of the ball the last few days. Who have you guys liked the most to have, I don't want to say won the offseason, because I think that gets decided closer to the season, but in terms of right now, who do you think's made the right moves to date?
I think there are a couple of teams, and kind of, I mean, the one obvious one to me, which I kind of laugh about, which is this Jalen Ramsey to the Dolphins. Dave, you just touched on it. The AFC East is going to be a brutal division. If that is not a Aaron Rodgers is about to come into this division trade, I don't know what is. So obviously, Jalen Ramsey had a pretty shit year last year at the Rams, so it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back. But I like that move for the Dolphins. A couple other moves on defense that I really like. Eagles have tried to kind of secure a whole bunch of their 11 defensive players that could leave. They haven't had much luck. I think they've only re-signed 4 of the 11 so far, but the kind of massive winner out of all of this is San Francisco. Their defense, they have just absolutely managed to lock in key players, bring in more key players in there, so I absolutely love what they've done. On offense for me, kind of the clear winner, I think, at the moment, trade-wise, and obviously we've still got some players out there that most likely will not be on the teams that they're currently at. DeAndre Hopkins is probably one who may end up somewhere like the Dallas Cowboys. But looking at the deals that have already been done, the New York Giants managed to basically swap Kadarius Toney, who they sent to the Chiefs for a third-round pick, into Darren Waller from the Las Vegas Raiders. Obviously, historically, the Giants, especially with Daniel Jones, haven't been the best with their tight ends. They obviously had Evan Engram for a while, and he wasn't lights out. But I am excited to see what the Giants do and how many more weapons they add at wide receiver beyond, you know, what they already have, and beyond the new addition at tight end of Waller.
Yeah, you know, I think
Go, Dave.
I was just sort of on top of that. Another team that I reckon, you mentioned it first, Simon, where we are sort of only in the early stages. Like, you know, there's still a lot of movement that we could see, you know, ahead of the draft, and then obviously once the draft happened as well. But the team that I'm kind of thinking is in a pretty good position to have a great offseason from what they've done is the Bears. You know, they've shored up their defense. They picked up Edmonds from the Bills, Edwards from the Eagles, and then obviously the trade back with the Panthers, and they got a pretty good haul, including DJ Moore that you mentioned, Thwaites. So I think that was a great trade from them. And some of the mock drafts have them still picking up Jalen Carter with that number 9 pick, which I think they would absolutely love. So, I mean, that might not happen, but if they could, that's a guy that they may have picked at number 1. Now, he's the one that kind of is in a bit of trouble with the law at the moment. But NFL owners don't really give a shit about that stuff. And so he will get picked up. It's just, they could effectively get a guy that could have been number 1 with number 9 and get all the haul they got from the Panthers. So, again, that's one of those things. Let's see how it all shakes out after the draft. But I think the Bears are well-placed to kind of have a tilt for that NFC North title.
Yeah, I don't hate that. I mean, I think they're going to have a fun team. I'm looking back and wondering, you know, that Chase Claypool trade. I mean, to mine, I traded for the second round pick, but it's the top of the second round, and I don't think that was a great trade for them, particularly now that they've got DJ Moore in there. But I the haul they got was fantastic from the Panthers, and I don't know, Dave. We'll talk about the draft soon. I'm not convinced Jalen Carter's going to drop that far. I think he's I think teams are still going to take him pretty high in the top five, top six. But I like the Bears. Circling back to the Dolphins, I like the moves they made, but for me, the Dolphins, it's all going to come down to Tua's health, and if he can stay on the field, we saw last year that they can be a really good team when Tua's fit and healthy and throwing the ball around. But if he's, you know, if his health concerns carry into next season, then I think, you know, they can add Jalen Ramsey, but I still think they're going to struggle in a division that's much tougher now. So, you know, they've done all they can to improve around him, but that'll be the big question mark for the Dolphins. Interested in your guys' thoughts out west, particularly with the Chiefs, Broncos, Raiders, and Chargers, because that was a division we came into last season thinking, hey, this is going to be one of the toughest divisions in the game. It wasn't. Two teams, the Raiders and Broncos, really underperformed. Have those teams, you know, have they improved? I mean, the Raiders have Jimmy Garoppolo now. What do you make of them?
I mean, the Raiders, for me, I think their problems last year were on defense. It wasn't so much offense. So bringing Jimmy Garoppolo in there is, I mean, you've basically got another version of Derek Carr, who's maybe slightly worse. You know, this version of Jimmy Garoppolo works very well with slot receivers. So I think that'll be very good. The Broncos haven't done them a bunch. That kind of AFC West is a little bit interesting in my mind, because none of the four teams have really made a huge amount of moves. But they've got a lot of players that have left. Dave, you touched on it before. Juju's obviously left. The Chiefs, he didn't make a huge impact there, but he's gone. The wide receiver market now is going to be absolute nightmare. So, you know, teams that do have wide receivers available to trade, you know, I already touched on DeAndre Hopkins. He will get a king's ransom. We've got Jerry Jeudy, who we're hearing a lot of noise about from the Broncos. So he may leave the Broncos. They're wanting a first round pick back for him. But even kind of running backs, like Austin Eckler has asked for a trade out of the Chargers. He hasn't been able to get another contract extension. So the AFC West looks pretty turbulent at the moment. And so I'm pretty worried about them, you know, because further out west, you know, in the NFC West, you've almost got the same problem where no one really did that great in that division. The Rams are basically like trying to get as many picks back as they can. There's rumors swirling around that Stafford may retire. I don't know if you know, he will or not. They're trying to get rid of Allen Robinson. You know, obviously the Cardinals are in a mess. So like, AFC West and NFC West both just seem like an absolute nightmare at the moment for me.
It's the East time now. That's the thing. I mean, the thing is, and you sort of bring this up, is that now that these free agents have signed and gone to their places, this is when the trade market can heat up, and teams that missed on free agents can go to the trade market. And, you know, a guy like Austin Eckler, if you can find a way to bring him in, then that'd be huge. But the Chargers would be reluctant to move him. But if you look around then the NFL now, Thwaites, you mentioned in our group chat 24 hours ago the Cowboys needed to do more. They've done a bit more of note, releasing Zeke Elliott. But if you look around the league, which teams do you think still have work to do going forward in the offseason?
Well, I think it's any team that where you kind of look at it, and you know, not picking on your Cowboys too much, Dave, because they got a great new addition yesterday with Gilmore to help on their defense. But it's really teams that, you know, are wide receiver needy. And the reason I say this is there's a lot of running backs out there. Miles Sanders still isn't signed with the team. Jamal Williams is out there. Obviously, Montgomery moved from the Chicago Bears to the Detroit Lions. But so there's a lot of good high quality running backs out there. There are not that many good high quality wide receivers available anymore. So what I want to see, especially because Noah Brown has gone from the Cowboys, he signed with another team, is the Cowboys making moves at wide receiver. CeeDee Lamb is an exceptional talent. He just needs some backup there. You know, whether it's an OBJ, and who knows what an OBJ looks like. Juju Smith-Schuster is obviously off the market now. Is it an Adam Thielen who is a free agent? Or is it, you know, they're going to go all out and get a DeAndre Hopkins while they can? So basically any team that, you know, is struggling at wide receiver, Chiefs,
yeah.
Cowboys, watch them. They're going to make some big moves once that trade window opens after 4 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday.
Yeah, and I think with the Cowboys, them moving Zeke, so for some people they might just, like, Zeke's, you know, been a bit of a stalwart for them and a bit of a fan favorite, but end of the day, they overpaid for him really, given the position, and that was that contract when he sort of did the holdout preseason when he was in Cabo, and, you know, I think he signed something like a 16, 17 per season, and he's taken up a big chunk of their salary cap. So moving him is not because they don't value him or want him, it's the fact that they need to kind of create that space to get where they have bigger needs. So that to me makes sense. I actually think in terms of, like, movement, you know, you're talking about all these trades, who needs to do more? That's a really positive move by the Cowboys, recognizing that that's what they need to do. And
it's also Dave, probably, like, and you may agree with this, you know, like, when you look at it, you kind of sit there and you're just like, we know Zeke wants to be a Dallas Cowboy. So by cutting him, he can go out and get an offer, and we can just sit there and match the offer, because we know, like, if it's a reasonable, like, contract and we want to get on board with it, he's always going to pick us over another team.
Yep. Well, what would be interesting is just the politics of that. Like, I agree that could be very much where it ends up, but, you know, sometimes these players, especially with egos, do get sour grapes. And even though he might have, you know, 2 days ago said, I want to be a Cowboy for the rest of my career, having something like this happen, maybe he's, you know, I'm going to show them, I'm going to go, you know, to the Eagles or somewhere else and make them pay for that decision. So it can kind of go both ways.
And that's also something that's a lot easier to say when you're on the team and you're trying to keep the fans happy and keep them on your side. I think it's a lot easier for the Cowboys, given how well Tony Pollard's performed as well, to cut their franchise running back, knowing that they've got a very good one sitting right there. So I think that's a great move from the Cowboys, but we'll see if they can make.
I have a couple more that I kind of just had a look at that I thought would have done more. I think Thwaites sort of mentioned, I thought the Vikings have been pretty quiet. I think you kind of touched on that a little bit there, Thwaites, earlier. You said the Chargers. I'm thinking the teams that were, like, are not that far away, right? Like, I don't really care about the Rams and the Cardinals because I feel like they've got a whole lot of mess. So I'm not probably expecting a lot. But, you know, the Vikings have to be looking at the NFC North thinking, okay, no Rodgers, this is our division. I'm surprised at their lack of kind of activity. And likewise with the Chargers, and Titans is another one that I haven't been that impressed with what they've done in the offseason.
Titans sound like they're ready to just blow everything up, though. There's been, like, rumors going around that they're shopping Derrick Henry.
I think they've been getting rid of all of their O line. Actually, I think I read. So, ouch. I mean, who wants to be the quarterback? Like, yeah.
What about everyone's favorite second team, at least on this pod, the Detroit Lions? What have you made of what they've done so far? Because we talked about them being a team that was on the cusp of, not greatness, but being a really good team and a really fun team. Do you think they've done enough?
Yeah, totally. Well, have they done enough with the free agents that are available? I think they have. They've got David Montgomery in, who at his time at Chicago Bears was a fantastic running back to back up Swift. So I think those two, you know, will be exceptional. We saw what Jamal Williams did last year at the Lions with a banged up Swift. So I think it's only going to be better with Montgomery there.
Is Jamal being cut?
Because Jamal, basically it's indicated he's gone.
Chaney might go to the Jets.
Montgomery's only 25 years old, which is
these running backs, man.
Yeah.
Wait, do you remember when I think I looked up Todd Gurley's age and he was like 21 2 years ago. No, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. But he was like 27 or 28 or something, and you're like, this guy's not even been in the league for 3 or 4 years. It's tough being a running back.
I think like honestly, like when I look at like what Detroit's doing, it just screams to me that they're gonna go very hard for defensive players in the draft. I mean, they did awful in the first probably three quarters of the season before they made coaching changes for defense. They got the number one or number two pick in the draft last year, where they picked up an absolute stud on defense. So, you know, that to me, Jared Goff's not going to be there forever, but I don't see them getting a quarterback this year, you know, at least in the first round.
Well, let's talk draft then. And the implications of free agency on the draft and where players might go. We'll start at the top, though, with the Panthers, because we haven't had a chance to talk about this massive trade they did with the Bears to get the first overall pick. So the Panthers are going for a quarterback. That's why you trade up to 1-1, basically. The question is, would it be CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, Will Levis, or Jason Richardson, I think, is the fourth guy's name. Is there any oil about who they're after, who they like there?
I'm going to have to look to Dave for this one, because basically I don't think they're going to go for CJ Stroud is kind of the feeling that I'm getting, and the feeling that the Texans will get him at number two. But Dave, like, you've been following college like far closer than I have in recent years. What do you think?
I think I'll be surprised if they don't go CJ Stroud. I think he's, okay, of the four, he's because everyone's worried about Bryce Young's height. He's shorter than or very similar height to Kyler Murray. So I think is the concerns there. But I think CJ Stroud is the most like NFL ready in terms of just like, you know, yeah. And he had an absolute blinder at the national semifinals, you know, which is as big of a game as you have. So for me, I feel like you're only trading up to lock in that because you like him. And maybe Bryce Young. If they pick anyone but Young or Stroud, it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. They could have easily gone to number three. Who's three? Is it Cardinals? They didn't have to go to one. It is fascinating because there's been murmurs that they like Richardson, who's, I think, athletically got the biggest upside. I think he's kind of getting comparisons to Cam Newton coming out of college. So, you know, this, like, he's just a monster. He's incredible on the ground. Got a huge arm. Like, and I think he you know, in the pro days and combine, he did exceptionally well. So I think there's a lot of fanfare about Richardson. But yeah, to trade up to one and do that would be crazy in my mind. When you've got Stroud and Young, who have actually proven themselves for the best teams in the SEC.
So I think what we can kind of like predict pretty safely, I don't think this is controversial at all, that 1-2 will either be Bryce Young or CJ Stroud in some order.
Yep.
Number three and beyond, though, is I think where it kind of gets a little interesting in the draft, because that's where you start looking at Arizona currently sits at three. They're not going to replace Kyler Murray. The kind of next QB needy team is sitting at four, which is the Colts. Do the Colts just trade up like one spot, just nobody can jump in front of them? Because when you start thinking about that, you start thinking about, like, you know, a Raiders at seven. Do they want to go for a cornerback? Do they want to jump up into that third spot? And, you know, that's where it gets really interesting. Also, like, teams like the Washington Commanders.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to have any intention of gunning for a quarterback in this draft, or they're just absolutely going to go into full-blown tank mode, which it looks like they potentially will, and just go for a quarterback and a high draft pick next season.
I think the Cardinals should be aggressively shopping that third overall pick, and I think the Texans should also be listening on the second overall pick, just to see. I mean, just looking at the value the Bears got for one, and I get it's 1-1, so it's the pick, and you're always going to, you know, blow the rest of the picks out of the water. But I think the Texans should also just see what's out there. It doesn't mean that they need to make a deal, but if they can get really good value for that and then attack a quarterback next year, then maybe it's a good play to build up the other parts of their roster in this year's draft. I don't think they'll do that. I think they're going to take a quarterback, but they would be silly not to at least look around and see what the offers are. But yeah, I think the Cardinals for sure should be listening to that third pick. They're probably, if they stay at three, going to get someone like Will Anderson. Maybe they go for Jalen Carter and make a big call there and take the controversial player there at three. But I think, knowing how desperate the Colts are for a quarterback, they could, even if it's trading with the Colts and putting the Colts up to number three, I think the Cardinals would get pretty good value for that third pick, and they'd only drop down one, and the team in front of them would be taking a quarterback. So they wouldn't lose anything, and they could potentially get some value just by swapping with the Colts. So that could just be a pretty... a bit of a win-win trade for the Cardinals. So I'm interested to see the games going into the draft this year.
I honestly, like, looking at it, I'm interested about those first two in the order of, like, the things I'm looking for out of the draft, because the draft gets hyped up so much. Nine times out of ten, it's real fucking boring. But the things that I'm looking for this year, the order of Stroud and Young, you know, going one and two. I want to see if another team jumps up. So again, like, I'm looking at the Commanders to potentially jump up and see if they can get the fourth quarterback off the board. I think the Colts will obviously take the third one. And then where Bijan Robinson goes, absolutely lights out stud of a running back. We obviously all know that the value of running backs has gone down in years and years and years. I'm kind of going to be pretty interested to see where he goes. So, you know, whether the Eagles ignore their needs on defense and draft him with the ninth or 10th pick, you know, whether the Titans are serious about getting rid of Derrick Henry and go for him, you know, just after the Eagles. But then also, Dave, we were talking yesterday about that absolute stud of a wide receiver. Who are you most excited about?
Yeah, well, for me going into the draft, like, I'm definitely most excited for, like, what you talked about, Simon, there, which is, comparing it to last year, there was only one quarterback that went in the first round. And this year we're talking about these four guys that could be any number of, you know, they're probably going to be in the top eight, probably even top six even, when the shakeout happens. And that just shows you the value in the NFL of a quarterback, right? So I think I don't think there was any sort of trading on the night in the first 10, 15, 20 picks. There might have been some late first round. Most people have switched off by then and don't care. So, like, this year, I think there is definitely, and I think it's a great call. It's a good take. I think the Colts and Cardinals, I could see that swapping. Colts just securing that three. And not letting anyone like the Raiders, like the Commanders, sort of swoop in there and take their third pick or third quarterback pick. So that's real. For me, that's going to be the most fascinating part of it. And I agree with these folks that they often, you know, start out as really promising, but they turn into a bit of a dud. I mean, end of the day, it is, you know, they drag it out for longer than it needs to be. But yeah, it's a big difference to last season when we only had Kenny Pickett, 20th pick. And then the next quarterback was on day two. So that's cool. But yeah, I mean, that I think you've kind of nailed the head of the people that interest me. There is a Ohio State wide receiver who's I think is very good. So I'll be interested to see. I think his name's like Smith Jarber or something. He I haven't got it in front of me, so I haven't might have
Jackson that. Smith Jarber.
Njaba. So he's elite. So
Njaba. Yeah. Jackson Smith. We can't pronounce your
his
last
brother
name.
Actually plays in Major League Baseball.
I think what's cool as well though is what from last year the wide receivers made a big statement. The rookies, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, like these guys came in and were elite. They weren't just they're elite for rookies. They were like nearly all star level. So that's kind of promising for, you know, this crop. There's, I think, three or four expected to go in that first round, and you're kind of expecting them to be immediate impacts, more so than some other positions that, you know.
You know what I like as well? I mean, a lot of these guys, they're elite wide receiver talent, but they're not going to be top 10 picks. And so what ends up happening is they end up going to decent teams. And so, like, you know, if this Ohio State guy dropped to 13th in the Jets there, or you know, the Jets have just traded away Garrett Wilson, I don't know, or any team down that sort of mid draft range is actually a decent team, and suddenly these wide receivers can actually go quite well. The thing I'm interested about, just touching on the quarterbacks quickly, is that you've got four of them, but they're all kind of good but not great. And so that, yeah, that leads to this debate about who's, you know, this uncertainty about which team's going to take who, and, you know, teams want to get the guy that they like the most, and they don't want to give other teams a chance because they really don't like the other three. So there's no clear Joe Burrow who's clearly going to go top that everyone wants. And so that adds a lot to the intrigue. And I think that's great as well, because, you know, that adds, you know, there will be surprises on draft night. And I don't know what the draft class is next season. It's definitely too early to say, but I think the early prediction is that the top quarterback in that might be better than these four. So that sort of plays into it as well, and that was part of my thinking with the Texans. But I'm looking forward to this draft. I think it's gonna shit all over last year's one, and I can't remember too many of the other ones before that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like the 2018 draft class where Baker Mayfield went on top. Sam Darnold goes third. Josh Allen weirdly goes seventh. Josh Rosen goes 10th. You know, like, so it feels like that one where it's like, someone's going to be a great quarterback, yes, out of this class. Yeah. You just have no idea who it is.
And it may not be in the order picked, you know?
Like, yeah.
There's going to be a Joe Burrow in here, and there's going to be a Sam Darnold.
And the beauty of these four is there's each of them have, like, if you had a pros and cons, they all have something to love and something to like not like, and that's so rare. And as you pointed out, so it's literally a bit of a dart throw, and each team's probably got a different opinion on who they're, if they were to rank the top four, there probably isn't that much unity on what they see.
No, should be a lot of fun seeing where they all land. When's the draft? It's coming up, right? A couple of weeks.
It'd be a good month away. It's normally mid to late April.
April 27th, so about 6 weeks away. So plenty of time to get stuck into the build-up after the trade and free agency winds up. All right, let's pivot across to the NBA. Final topic of the evening. News just a hand as well. Ja Morant suspended 8 games by the NBA. He's already missed a bunch, and they'll count towards that suspension, but an 8-game suspension for Ja Morant. Quickly, thoughts
where
on that?
Is he? Where is he right now?
He was in New York. He had a meeting with the commissioner today in New York.
Yeah, which is funny, Dave, because I know exactly where you're fucking going. 2 days ago, it was like there were headlines everywhere. Like, Ja Morant has been checked himself into counseling in Florida. And then, like, suddenly today he's in fucking New York. I'm like,
I mean, it's a 2-hour flight.
Yeah, but a counseling facility, come on. You would assume you're in a counseling facility for longer than fucking 2 days. It doesn't seem like a lot. It seems like a tick the box activity.
Yeah.
Is this like a drug rehab, but this is for like I'm a bad person rehab?
I went to a private school and I'm trying to show off with my cool new friends kind of rehab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're not going to dig too deep into Ja Morant. We're going to talk East versus West. We saw the other day the Nets topple the Denver Nuggets. Fantastic finish to that game as well. The Nets are looking really good at the moment, just quietly. But that what's interesting to that is that, like, the Nets are pretty kind of, they're solid, but they're pretty clearly the fifth or sixth best team in the East at the moment. Nuggets are top of the West. And I know it's just one game, but you do look at the NBA standings right now, and you do, like, to me it seems pretty clear that the top teams are very much in the East, with the Bucks, Celtics, 76ers. I think those are the top three teams in the NBA right now. What do you guys think?
It's a hard thing about the NBA. Like, the season's just so long, and, you know, teams go on these weird runs or weird streaks of losses. And it just kind of goes to show, like, how much, you know, can happen. Like, the Grizzlies are on a miserable stretch of games at the moment. Obviously, Ja Morant's not there, but even when Ja Morant was there, Steven Adams was out. And, you know, like, I know it's very easy to be like, oh, three Kiwis. Of course they're going to say that about Steven Adams.
He's actually
valuable. But the Correct. The numbers with Adams and without Adams are like crazy to see, and we'll put them up on our pod, on our Instagram. But you know, he just creates space for Jar, and you know, the Nuggets are just going through this weird like 4-game skid at the moment. I don't know if I'm ready to say that the Bucks are better than the teams in the West. The Celtics, like, depends what team shows up. They've obviously been very shaky lately, losing to the Nets and the Knicks. You know, and I think they lost the other night against the Rockets. So, again, the Celtics are going through their own stuff as well, and could all just be jostling for playoff positioning, but I would fancy the Nuggets to win over any of those East teams in the 7-game series.
Yeah, I'd probably.
I'm not ready to say that the East is running the NBA.
I'm probably in Simon's corner there. I'd probably sway to the East with the top teams, more because I haven't seen enough from the Nuggets in recent seasons with a similar side to actually, you know, in playoffs. I feel like my money's safer going on Giannis than it is on the Nuggets, just because he's done that. He's led the team, you know, put the team on his back and led them to a chip. What I reckon when looking at the standings, like, so yeah, you got the Bucks, Celtics and 76ers, as you mentioned, Simon. But I actually think the depth in the West is a much stronger. Like, when I look at the teams, when you look at the teams in the play-in on the East versus the teams in the play-in on the West, I feel like the standard or the teams in the West are stronger. And that's, I'm talking about the Lakers, the Mavericks, the Timberwolves, you know, against the Raptors, Wizards, Hawks. So I feel like yes, the top teams in the East are probably currently the teams that are like running the NBA, if you'd argue, or like the teams that I'd put as favourites to win it. But in terms of the full playoff picture, I think the West is a bit deeper compared to the East.
Yeah, right. Like the eighth seed in the West is probably beating the eighth seed in the East. I could get on board with that. One thing I can get on board with is the Mavericks being terrible. 34-35 at the moment. They could lose. They could tomorrow, if things go the wrong way, they could be in 12th place in the Western Conference tomorrow.
Wow.
They are not doing well at the moment.
Hate to see it, but also, like, part of me kind of, like, does hate to see it, because I'm like, I like Luka. Like, I want a Luka, Devin Booker, like, final series, because that shit is so much fun to watch when those two just fucking hate each other, and it's amazing to watch.
And the Kyrie KD playoff series would be cool. I mean, I would love it if it was the first round matchup and the Suns, you know, knocked them out. But yeah, I mean, there's problems there for the Mavs for sure. I think basically, I'm fully on board with Dave's point. I think that the top of the East is comfortably, like, I think the top three teams in the East would be top of the West, would be the top three teams in the West. No question.
And but this is the problem. This is the problem with the West, though. The Golden State Warriors could beat the Celtics and the Bucks at the moment.
Yeah, and to be fair to the Warriors, like, they've been one of the better teams probably in the West for the past month or so. So, you know, they were very bad to start the season, and look at their away record, still 7-26. And they've improved a lot. They're fifth seed now. They're, you know, one game behind the Suns in fourth. So they're, you know, they're climbing up. And the Clippers as well. The Clippers were very slow to start the season, but they're having a lot more success now. So I think, you know, there's a lot of these teams, if you looked at their sort of month to month record, or maybe even the last couple of months for some of these teams, you would see a lot better than perhaps their current standing is overall.
Here's a question for you both then. Where do you think the NBA finals winner, what division are they coming out of? The East or the West? East or the West? East or the West? Because it sounds like you're both leaning to the East. Okay, yeah. So you're definitely East. Dave, what are you thinking? Because part of me thinks the West. Like, I just feel that whoever's going to come out of there, because there's going to be some great playoff games in the West. Like, the East, kind of the playoff games seem a bit disappointing to me, because I feel like we're just going to get to the inevitable Bucks Celtics for the final. But
well, the probably what would be interesting, if it is the inevitable Bucks Celtics, is if that's a seven game, you know, it's going to be physical. That's actually going to go against whoever gets through. So that's probably a big argument for the West team winning it, particularly if it's like a Warriors team that can kind of get through there unscathed, or the Nuggets, who have obviously been pretty good through the season. So yeah, I could very well see being the West team winning it, more on the back of just the Eastern finalist being beat up.
I'm going with the West just because I feel like there are so many teams in the West. I mean, I would probably take a couple out, but there's probably five or six teams from the West that you could see legitimately going to the Western Conference Finals and coming out of it. With the East, like, realistically, like, there's two teams, you know, and you're kind of the maybe West, three. You know, wouldn't... Yeah, yeah, because the Brooklyn Nets are amazing. but, you know, like, the Nuggets, the Grizzlies, the Kings, you know, the Suns, the Warriors, like, you know, you could all see them going up there. You could even see, you know, Oklahoma and doing a cheeky run.
What I will say is the West has funner good teams than the East.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The West has the Kings, who are kind of cool. The Grizzlies, their star's kind of not so bright at the moment. The Thunder are kind of fun. Even the Suns are not too bad. The East, I'm kind of bored of the Bucks, Celtics, and 76ers. I mean, I like the Knicks being there, but I think, you know, there's more like one-off teams to root for in the West. Like, I'll get on board rooting for the Kings and the Thunder to go on a run out in the West, but I don't know if there's really anyone in the East who I'm like, oh, I really want this team to go on a run like there are for those teams in the West.
Just before we wrap up, so there was news that came out today that the New York Yankees are one of only two teams in Major League Baseball that do not provide Wi-Fi for players on planes and make them buy their own Wi-Fi passes on planes, the other being the Cincinnati Reds. So the Yankees are worth $6 billion or something like that. If there was any NBA team that you could see doing the same thing, is it going to be the Knicks? Because that's immediately who it came to my head. Just like Doolin just being such a cheap prick that he makes them all pay for Wi-Fi on their private plane.
Yeah, he probably makes them pay for Wi-Fi and for extra legroom, which obviously for an NBA team on a private plane, everyone needs. And, but they have to pay for those seats.
And for carry-on. And
they fly Spirit Airlines. But also, like, someone broke it down. And so I keep me honest here. They basically worked out to be... So it would be cost $40,000 for an unlimited pass for the plane for the year, which I think was what? Four Gerrit Cole pitches under his current contract.
Yeah, I read this article, Four pitches, not even four innings, four pitches. Apparently Brett Gardner, when he was on the team, was mugging off Gerrit Cole, saying it was because he was costing too much that the team couldn't afford Wi-Fi. Surely
Gerrit Cole paid for the Wi-Fi for the team. Well, I've got this one.
Apparently the Yankees let the team expense it back to them, so these players could... I think it was like $10 or something. Each was what I saw quoted, and these guys earning $30 million a year. I think they can work.
I could see Gerrit Cole kind of looks like a kind of guy that probably would expense plan that.
Yeah,
there is a guy that just flat out refused to pay. He was just like, "Fuck that, I'm not doing it."
Yeah,
hey, I don't hate it. Famous. I mean, planes, you know, lack of Wi-Fi on planes sometimes can be a little bit of a blessing. It's like a rare chance to just get off the grid for a couple of hours. So. Yeah.
You want it to be pitch black and go into like pitch a retreat. Black. The team could do like a
darkness retreat.
And I'll come out. I'll come out and request a trade. Just to New York. All right, let's wrap it up. Great episode. Really enjoyed that one. That was lots of fun to talk. NFL. We'll have more next week. The trade deadline's kicking off. Thwaites, Wednesday.
Today, 4 PM. Wednesday, 4 PM.
And trades will happen pretty quickly. Do they tend to happen?
Probably won't be. You'll see an initial flurry, I think, over the next week, but it won't be as chaotic as these signings that we've just seen. But
still, plenty to talk about. I'm sure we'll dive right into it. So until then, have a great week.
Yeah, keep an eye on DeAndre Hopkins. Bye.
Bye.